The following is an encore presentation of History Worth Hearing. The original episode aired on April 2nd, 2021.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning...
And spiders. The only thing you have to fear is fear itself and spiders. And if you have to work on your day off, that's pretty scary too. But fear not, because you are listening to the History Worth Hearing show, a presentation of the Vashon Heritage Museum. I am your host, Chris Austin, and joining me today is none other than the museum's own executive director, Elsa Kroonquist. But before we begin, we have a few corrections from the last show. Wow, there are quite a few here. Whew. How about the top three? Let's see. Vashon is not a French word for Stud Island, which means I'm going to have to change my dating profile. The K2 factory is not built over a space-time portal into another dimension. And lastly, Maury Island was never part of South America. Good to know. We have a great show for you today. We have a new segment called Neighborhood Stories. We have a review of a 1907 newspaper printed right here on Vashon Island. And we'll also discuss the upcoming Museum Talk, which is a collaboration between the Heritage Museum and the Vashon Community Care Center. So that's very interesting. And we'll start off with everybody's favorite, Island Trivia. It's time for trivia. Yay!
Yay!
Now we got some, Elsa and I are going to ask you lovely listeners a couple of questions here. And then at the end of the show, we'll have the answers. Now, if I'm correct, Elsa, if you get all the questions right, then you get a shopping cart in 5 minutes in the museum archives, and you can take home all the things you can stuff in the cart in 5 minutes.
You know, Chris, you keep proposing things that our head of collections, Lori Tucker, just would not agree to.
What? She wouldn't do that?
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen.
Can do it, but we can't. Okay, fine. I know.
But yeah, Thriftway can do it. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. And we're wonderful too, but we're not going to do that. People don't want us to give away the collections.
I was going to rig it so I got all the questions right, because I'd love to do that. Okay, question number one. The Russian Orthodox Church on Maury Island has a connection with a well-known dive bar in Boston. What is the connection? All right. What do you got?
Question number two. What two Vashon industries were the largest west of the Mississippi?
Okay, so if you're looking at a map, it's on the left side of the Mississippi. All right. Number three. That's your question. I'm sorry.
Question number three. Winghaven used to go by another name back in the 1920s and 30s. What name did it go by?
Okay, and question number four. Where was the first museum located?
Question number five. Docton Park was established in 1936. What was the nickname island people knew it by?
All right, so think about that. We're going to go on with the show, and at the end, we will have your answers.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Would you be mine?
That, of course, was Mr. Rogers, famous quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Thank you, Mr. Rogers. He is introducing a new segment called Neighborhood Stories, short vignettes of life on the island. And how about a nice little story about an island scourge? I'm talking about English ivy growing amongst us. It's the botanical equivalent of a pop-up ad on the internet, everywhere and unwanted. It's the only plant that can make your backyard look like a pretentious British institution. Hold on a minute. You know, there's one growing up my leg right now. Hold on. Jeez, okay, there it goes. I'd like to read you an article by Bruce Hallman and Terry Donnelly titled The Curious Case of Vashon Ivy. English ivy, it chokes everything in its path. It is lush and green and it is everywhere. Vashon Island has the perfect climate and growing conditions for English ivy to flourish. It has flourished so well it has become the kudzu of the Pacific Northwest. In fact, ivy has thrived on Vashon to the point that King County Parks has started an ivy-free Vashon program. And the Vashon Land Trust has developed the Vashon Ivy League, an ivy eradication program to try and rid the island of this creeping menace. So how did English ivy make its way to Vashon and become such a threat to our ecosystem? Like most things sinister, the origin of Vashon ivy is a relatively simple story. This is the way it was recounted in 1935 in the Vashon Island News Record, the beachcomber of its day. This is an article by Louise Dahl titled Souvenir Gavel Made from Ivy Originally Grown by Ezra Meeker. In 1879, the log cabin home of Ezra Meeker of Puyallup twined an old and rugged ivy as if to hold together in its sinuous arms the domestic love and felicity of the old pioneer. How well the family prospered beneath its leafy shade is known by the long and illustrious life of the one who planted first its feeble root. The old log cabin still stands in Pioneer Park. Although removed from its original site, the ivy still winds its leafy arms around those ancient logs. Cement pillars, like a cane to an old man, help support the falling limbs. Limbs that now measure a full 12 inches through. J.M. McClintock, at that time the manager of the Ezra Meeker store, one day he cut a slip of the old ivy and planted it on his homestead in Ellisport. It thrived and grew until 1884 when the McClintocks moved to Burton and started in business. The ivy, like an old friend, was brought along and transplanted near the store by the woodshed. Many changes have taken place since the old store no longer stands, replaced by a restaurant, meat market, and drugstore. The ivy grew along the years until it completely covered the old woodshed. At last, one Christmas morning, a thick blanket of snow added to the weight of years bore the old patriarch in the last resting place. Some attempted to raise the old ivy, but found it impractical. An ardent gardener, J.F. Shaw of Burton, preserved a portion of the trunk. A portion of the wood was given to A.J. Lewis, manual training teacher at the Vashon Island High School, who proceeded to make it into a gavel. The gavel was presented by Mr. Shaw to the Burton Improvement Club on March 1st, with the hope that good luck and prosperity that accompanied this old ivy through all those years will remain and add even greater good fortune to the Burton Improvement Club. So there we have it. We have to thank pioneer homesteader J.M. McClintock of Ellisport for bringing ivy to Vashon. And what we'd like to know is, where is the Burton Improvement Club gavel? It should be preserved and presented to the Land Trust on the day they finally eradicate ivy from the island. If anyone knows where this gavel is, please email us at radio@vashonheritage.org. And that concludes Neighborhood Stories.
Extra! Extra! Read all about it!
Now let's see what we have in the paper today. If today was May 24th, 1907. But first, Elsa, let's set the stage. What was going on in the year 1907? Well, internationally, Britain and Russia signed the Anglo-Russian Agreement resolving disputes in Persia, Afghanistan, and Tibet. And we never, ever had another problem in those areas ever. So that was really good that they solved that.
The work was done a long time ago. That was wonderful.
So Iran, Afghanistan, and Tibet.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Guglielmo Marconi, inventor of and pioneer of the radio, launches the first commercial transatlantic wireless service between Canada and Ireland. Now, the radio would go on to its crowning achievement, which of course would be Voice of Vashon. And let's see, nationally, the United States establishes the very first Air Force on December 31st. The very first ever ball drop was held in Times Square in New York. In April 7th of that year, it was the all-time busiest day of immigration to the United States through Ellis Island, with 11,747 people processed one day. Yikes.
So that was all time of all time or just for that year?
For all time processed for Ellis Island in its history. And they processed millions of people over the years.
Right.
And locally, some pretty cool stuff, United Parcel Service is founded in Seattle in 1907. Also, Pike's Place Market in Seattle officially opens for business. So, pretty cool. And that's when this paper started. This is the very first volume. So, the very first year of business, number three, third paper they made that year. And just a little bit of background on the paper, which is named Vashon Island News. In the last show, we kind of highlighted Van Olinda's very first paper, the Island Home, that he began in 1892. It was a monthly paper. Then he began a weekly paper, the Vashon Island Press, and that began in 97. Began in 95, but in 97, Van Olinda moved off the island and he took his printing press and his paper with him. So between 97 and the first year of this, 1907, we really don't know if the island had a paper or not. But we did find this one, which began in 1907. By John and Philip Harmeling, and it was edited by S.J. Harmeling. They continued publishing until 1914, and that's when Ira Case purchased it because he felt the south end of the island was not receiving the coverage it deserved, and he moved the publication to the Hatch Building in Burton. So that is a very quick history of this newspaper.
Very quick. So this newspaper, and so there was always only one newspaper on the island, right? And they just kept changing hands instead of competing.
That would change. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but probably in the next show, we'll talk about a competing paper was opened a few years after this. And then those two eventually merged.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Didn't mean to scoop you.
Yeah. Well, now we got nothing to talk about for the next show, but
Okay.
Now, I love the headline. Again, this paper begins mostly with advertising. There's a huge chunk of the front page, like probably 40, 50%. But the headline story is Mr. L.C. Beale Jr. brings the first automobile to Vashon Island. Mr. H. Steen loses first place. So apparently Mr. Steen had ordered an automobile, but it was held up in production and Mr. Beale's automobile got here first. So Mr. Steen lost out on being the first person to have a car on the island. The car was a 12 horsepower Franklin. Yipes. I think Electric Ranger's got more horsepower than that. And he said the chauffeur took six people from the wharf to the Beale house in 9 minutes, which was a record.
Wow. So the chauffeur. So if you had a car, you had a chauffeur. Wow.
Well, apparently the chauffeur was also to teach him how to use the car.
How
to crank the engine and all the little things that we don't even think about.
Driving instructor and the mechanic. That's nice. Comes with a car. That comes with a warranty probably.
Yeah. I don't know, but I'd like to see how they service it. Well, you want your car fixed, bring it into the shop in Seattle.
Or roll it into the barn.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what they had to do, there were no ferries then. So they had to put this like a giant piece of cargo on the deck of a steamer. This was an involved process. It wasn't like drive it on, drive it off.
That's why this is such a big deal.
Yeah. And I can't imagine what the roads were like. I mean, they had to be just, they're wagon trails.
Right. Right. That'd be terrible. The ruts and everything.
Yeah. Nothing paved. Well, did you find anything in the paper that caught your interest?
Oh, wow. Did I ever. What I thought was interesting, I don't know if you saw this, but right next to your Beale article, it's yeah. there's this is an advertisement. Banking by mail is safe and practical. It's also very simple. And if you're interested in saving money, write us about our system of banking by mail, and we will send you a booklet regarding our savings department and its 4% interest. This is the Dexter Horton and Company Bankers in Seattle. So wow. I don't know, what did they do? Did they go, hey, I've got $5. It's time for me to put it in an envelope and send it over to Seattle. 4% interest. I would do that. We're not getting any interest these days.
Well, you got to think of all the hands that envelope would go through.
Yeah.
To get to the teller. Like, yipes, that is sketchy stuff.
Talk about trusting of the mail. Wow, that's a big deal.
Well, I came across an ad, too, that caught my attention. One was, Lily's best lice killer. So I guess Lily was pretty handy with killing lice.
Wait, Lily's... Okay, I'm so confused. I thought when you started that we were going to talk about the flowers, lilies. You know?
No, it's someone's name. Lilies.
And do lilies have lice? So that's for hair. Okay.
Yes. Well, actually, you know, it's for feathers. It's for poultry.
Oh, for chickens.
Chickens, yeah.
Oh, yes. My mom told me that chickens have lice. Yeah.
And here's the one that I got. Here's a testimonial that caught my attention. Starts off, worn to a skeleton. And it's got a drawing of a woman. So you know it's a real testimonial. A wonderful restoration caused a sensation in Pennsylvania town. That's the subheading. Mrs. Charles N. Preston of Elkland, Pennsylvania says, 3 years ago, I found my housework was becoming a burden. I tired easily, had no ambition, and was fading fast. My complexion got yellow and I lost over 50 pounds. My thirst was terrible and there was sugar in my kidney secretions, what we call urine. My doctor kept me on a strict diet, but as his medicine was not helping me, I began using Doane's kidney pills. They helped me at once and soon all traces of sugar disappeared. I have regained my former weight and am perfectly well. That's quite an endorsement of Mr. Doane's pills.
It sure is. What were Mr. Doane's pills for? Because
he's got Doane's liver pills.
They were liver pills.
Yeah. You know, I think these are just, nostrums that had no medical benefit. But what's interesting is when she says, my kidney secretions were sugary. And that's how physicians used to diagnose diabetes.
Right. So are Doane's pills a diabetic for diabetics?
What my guess is they're probably sugar pills themselves. I can't imagine these have any clinical value. But what you could get away with, I guess.
Yeah, but Doane's pills were around in the 60s and 70s.
Oh yeah. I think Doane's made a lot of pills for whatever organ was popular.
Okay. Kidney,
liver, stomach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, interesting.
You gotta find out whatever happened to Doane's pills. What?
Okay.
The Doane's empire.
If anybody knows what happened to Doane's pills, send in your answer to. Go ahead, tell us what you're supposed to send your
History
answer.
History Worth Hearing. And that email is radio@vashonheritage.org. I got another one here for Castoria. And I think castor, wasn't that like cod liver oil or something?
Castor oil. I mean, this one caught my eye too, especially with the headline.
Don't poison baby.
Good Lord. Yeah. So just think of all of the young mothers, any mother who are going, what?
Yeah, and it goes on to say that 40 years ago, so they're making fun of mothers 40 years ago, they gave their child's paregoric and laudanum to go to sleep. And of course, we know today those are opium products. Mm-hmm. And wow, just, and I like the way they phrase it. Her child must have paregoric or laudanum to make it sleep.
It's sleep. I saw that too. Yeah.
Not much has changed. It's got letters from prominent physicians all praising the Castoria.
Yes, but you know, they're saying you're safe now because druggists are prohibited from selling either of the narcotics named to children at all. And this was, you know, it's saying 40 years ago. So that was in the mid 1800s. We're in 1907, mid 1800s. Yeah. Amazing anybody survived those days. But what I'm wondering is, you know, they're saying, okay, this is so kids will sleep to sleep, but they're not saying Castoria, which I think is castor oil, is that that's just to make a child healthy. So they'll have energy, they'll go out and play, and that'll help them sleep better.
I guess that's it, because you're right. It doesn't say take this for sleeping. It just says take it.
Yeah.
Promotes digestion, cheerfulness, and rest. Okay.
Okay.
Well, it says it's a vegetable preparation, so maybe it isn't cod liver oil. Another ad that caught my eye, probably yours too, was the Haslocker company, because it's company's symbol was a swastika.
Yeah, I do see it. Yeah,
that was a symbol of good luck and good fortune from around the world, Asia, Native Americans. And it goes back, the first known replication of that symbol was on a mammoth tusk, carved into a mammoth tusk 10,000 years ago. So it's been around a long time. It wasn't until the Nazis corrupted it that everybody, you know.
But what's he selling with this?
He is selling property, and his pitch uses something called, and I had to look this up, it's called an acrostic poem. An acrostic poem is the first letter of each line of poetry. If you read them vertically, they spell out a word. So if you look at the poem he's got here, it says Haslocker, but the first letter of each line of the poetry does the H and the A and the S. So he starts out with hark, list, and likewise here. Are you not drawing near summertime? And then he goes on to say, buy some property. You'll be happy. So that's a interesting advertising scheme, acrostic poem. What else we got in here? I always like the masthead. Vashon Island News, it's got the publisher. Subscription rate, $1 per year, strictly in advance. So no shenanigans. Did you find something you like?
So, you know, we had a lot of international news and national news. And there was some local news. So the Vashon College notes, the cantata, Under the Palms, given in Vashon College Chapel on Friday evening, was indeed amusing, a musical treat for the appreciative audience that filled the large room. School talent was assisted by about 50 singers from Tacoma, who, with as many friends, came to Burton on the steamer Resilience. So, I mean, that was cool. Ah. You know, it's like no big deal, but come on over. And yeah, on a Friday evening from Tacoma, and singers were coming over here, 50 people. I mean, that's kind of is a big deal. So that was really cool. Active participation is being made. Oh, so then it goes on to say, active preparation is being made for the 15th annual commencement. 9 students will be graduated from the different courses this year.
Wow. Nine students.
Nine students, the 15th year of the high school, and nine students will be graduating. Wow. They've got lots happen. It's not a high school. I'm sorry. It's a college.
You could fit the whole college in one bus.
Or one wagon.
One wagon. Or maybe the Franklin car. You get the whole graduating class in it.
The whole graduating class. That's right.
Wow. That's amazing. So yeah, it started in 1892. So that would have been the 15th year. Yeah.
And, you know, they're telling you, you better sign up soon because the new catalog is now in press and will be ready for distribution in about 2 weeks. Many inquiries are being made in regard to future enrollment and prospects for are bright for a full enrollment. So, Chris, we better go get signed up
well,
before they fill up.
As we know, it closed in 1910.
Oh, no. Oh. This is 1907.
So their enrollment wasn't quite as ambitious as they wanted.
Bummer. Okay, well.
Now, so if you were a freshman in 1907, you didn't graduate. Yeah, I guess you would.
Yeah.
Be the last class. Just
barely, yeah. You'd have to swim to Seattle to catch a class at Seattle U or someplace to finish up.
All right, I'm going to throw some hard science at you. You ready?
I'm ready. Go for it.
This article is, will it cure? Tropical vegetable remedy for rabies now being tried. Whoa. Dr. Joseph Thomas, a Hattiesville, Maryland resident, a suburb of Washington, believes he has a cure for rabies. Dr. Thompson, while in India in 1883, saw two natives on the ground apparently dead. They were said to have been bitten by venomous snakes. So not one snake. It's two unlucky guys with two snakes. Okay. Then he saw another native bend over the men and blow from a leaf a white powder up the nostrils of each. A short time later, the two men were up and walking around, apparently suffering no ill effects from the bites. Wow.
Okay. So the snakes had rabies? I was still on the rabies.
I guess
so.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think maybe the poison of the snake probably killed them rather than rabies, because it seems like rabies takes a little bit of time to foment. Now, he goes on to say the remedy is always administered by being blown up the nostril of the patient, preferably up the nostril on the side which the bite is located. I don't think that's the way circulatory system works, but...
So they were bitten on that side of the nose?
Yes.
It's a white substance.
It's a white powder.
It's a white powder. I know where you're going here. You know where I'm going here. Yeah. I mean, cocaine will probably bring people back to life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, my favorite part is this. He says this can be used on animals.
Remedy.
So all you have to do is go up to a rabid dog and blow powder up its nose. No big deal.
That's I see. Yeah. First test it on people.
I can't.
Then go up to a rabid dog.
And I can't see anything bad that would happen whatsoever from blowing powder up its nose.
Yes. Well, I mean, this is history. So, and history isn't always pretty, but you think of what the cure for a rabid dog back in those days.
That's true. Of course, now your face is half eaten off by a rabid dog, but...
No, you get out your gun, son, and right?
Well, even today, I think you can't really treat rabies. I mean, you can vaccinate them quickly after, you know, you're bitten. Mm-hmm. But the actual disease, I think there's like one or two people in the world that have survived it. And maybe it's these two guys, I don't know.
So are we, you know, I mean, I've heard the treatment for rabies, what it is, if you've been bitten and what you have to do, you know, it used to be at least some very big needle goes into your stomach. And
yeah. Something. You know, I looked into that. It's no longer the case, but the reason they used to do that is these antibodies were exceptionally large in the stomach area.
Oh.
And they thought that this vaccine would promote that better since it was in the area. That's probably not the exact reason, but it was something like that they specifically chose the stomach because it had these bigger molecules that were antibodies or something like that. But then they found out, doesn't matter. Just shoot them in the arm.
Hey, can I talk about the news of the week? Oh, items from various parts of the world.
Yeah, that's
good. I mean, this was definitely what hit me that, you know, they're going, we're not going to talk about the apple crop anymore. Let's talk about what's happening in Seattle and in China and
I know.
All over the world. Yeah.
That was interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, resume of the less important, though not less interesting, happenings throughout the world, given in a condensed form. I'll read some of these to you. A 10% wage increase is to be granted 85,000 cotton mill operatees in southern New England.
Workers. Operatees. I like that.
Operatees in southern New England on May 27th. The Chicago Commercial Association is projecting a strenuous move to secure both. They're projecting a strenuous move to secure both Republican and Democratic national conventions for that city. Even then, they knew that was big money.
That's
conventions into your city.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what city was that?
Fill up those hotels. That was Chicago.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it makes
1907.
Sense.
1907.
You know, kind of middle of the country, so to speak, and getting there is probably less than, you know.
Absolutely. And they can jump on all those trains that go right to Chicago, along with all the beef that's loaded into those train cars, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that would eventually lead to the Chicago 7.
But Chicago's a happening place back in 1907, because also they're reporting that wheat passed the dollar mark at Chicago Monday amid great excitement on the Board of Trade.
Oh.
So you're right. I mean, Chicago is the middle of the country. Yeah. It was.
And I think it was
the middle of the
commodities market there. Isn't that their big?
Yeah.
Let's see. I got one here. I mean, do you have another one? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Oh, I have oodles of them, but you go ahead.
This is a social commentary article.
Okay.
The Gospel of Common Sense. And the subtitle is, it is badly needed by a rising generation of Americans. So this is one of those, these kids are rotten to the core. They're all bad. It says, it is probably among the working people today that relatively to their means, the greatest amount of extravagance and recklessness as to the future exists. Yipes. It is noticeable even in the smaller towns that in the shops and grocery stores, the most expensive articles are largely sold and finery in dress is a passion. It has been found by observation of the girls who work the mills and factories that the largest part of their wages goes to useless adornment. Wow. Indeed, many of them say the purpose of working at all is in order to get money for fine hats and clothes. I don't know if I buy that. I think if you work in a factory or a mill, you're probably paying for rent and groceries and
food. Yeah.
I don't know if the main reason is for fine hats after your 6 days a week, 12 hours a day job. Well, don't I have a fine hat?
Though I would have to say that would be, I don't sneer at this. I think this is fantastic because this is the beginning of a very, you know, a very large industry, fashion.
Well, no kidding.
Billions and billions of dollars for the industry.
Young women in the factories could live past 30, they might be able to get something nice.
We're dreaming big here on Vachon. Yeah.
It goes on to say, a close observer and student of social questions estimates that the United States loses $1,000 million in bad cooking and much more in drink every year. So I think $1,000 million, I think that's a billion. I don't know if that word just wasn't used back then. But apparently this guy says so much food is wasted from bad cooking because these women weren't taught to cook. They just let them run off to the mills and have fun.
They were so busy trying, because they were sent at the age of, you know, 10 or 12 to the mills so that they could feed their families. Yeah. So they couldn't learn to cook. I got it.
Mm-hmm. I think this is, there's no author to this article. My guess is it's probably an industrialist mogul with no heart.
That's yeah. Well, also a person who knew he'd be run out of town if he printed his name. He or she, but probably a he.
I think it's a he. All right, listeners, we have a little treat for you. As you know, we have my co-host, Elsa Kroonquist, executive director of the museum. But joining us is Ann Atwell, and she is the development director at the Vachon Community Care. And the reason I want them together in the same Zoom room, if you will, is because these two organizations are collaborating on some talks. And I just wondered if they could probably expand on that. Elsa, could you start and maybe tell us a little bit how this is working for the museum?
You bet. Well, you know, Chris, we've got our talks every month that started when COVID started, and we are doing them through Zoom. There are history talks. That's our way to continue the Heritage Museum's mission, especially during COVID, was collecting the stories and telling the history, telling the stories of our island. So every Thursday night, or every second Thursday of the month, in the evening, we do these talks. So we've been coming up with all of these subjects, and Anne and I got together. You know, Anne will tell you why she wanted to join us, but we wanted to enrich these talks even more by presenting three talks a year, which is part of a series called Lives Well Lived. And so we get to expand our brainstorming on new subjects by working with the folks at VCC, which is such a loved organization on the island. And it's our way of also, we wanted to collect the stories of those folks who are there at VCC. So this is extends our ability to get in and talk to folks who've had lives well lived and to learn their history.
So Anne, how did you come up with this idea to approach the Heritage Museum for these talks?
So Vachon Community Care, about 8 years ago, I think, had a series called Telling Stories. And Linda Milosorov, who was my predecessor, or one of my predecessors, produced this series along with the board of the Community Care Center. And they were really popular. And one of the highlighted ones was Dr. Faggy talking about eradicating smallpox. And, you know, Vachon's just so full of people who have done extraordinary things in the world and on Vachon. So when we were thinking about how, as Vachon Community Care, wanted to present ourselves as more of a resource for topics around aging, we looked back to this wonderful series of Telling Stories and thought, how could we reinvent that? And of course, Elsa and I have been talking for a while now about how maybe we could join forces with Vachon Heritage Museum to document lives of people who are you know, elders in our community. And not necessarily just the people who live at BCC, but the people who live on Vashon. And the other thing is Vashon Community Care really wants to exemplify how people can live, you know, as they age, very healthy, productive lives. So in that vein, we came up with this idea of a series that we call Lives Well Lived that really focuses on people who have done, used their passions in life, in their careers mostly, to make a difference in the community and also in the world at large.
When Anne and I first started talking about this, you know, there are like Dr. Fagy, these people who have had these brilliant careers off the island. And so what we want is the tie-in to the island. So, and one tie-in is you've had this brilliant career off the island. You've done these fantastic initiatives and accomplished so much. What brought you to the island? How did you happen to land on Vashon? Were you born here, or what in some cases people are, but what brought them to the island? Mm-hmm. So that's our tie-in to how they've become part of our history.
Well, you know, it seems to me that you know, each organization's got its own mission statement and goals, but there's a lot of overlap that can really be exploited and benefit both organizations.
I agree.
How many of these do you have planned?
We hope to do 3 of them. And of course, they're under the umbrella of the Vashon History Talks, the Vashon Heritage Museum's History Talks. So we're hoping to do 3, one this spring in April, on April 8th. Then one probably in July and another in October.
What's the April 8th? That's coming up here pretty soon. What's that talk?
It is so appropriately focused on the Vashon Medical Reserve Corps, who led by some really incredible doctors, all of whom live on Vashon. And then of course, you know, the hundreds of volunteers who have been part of Vashon's response to COVID. But it was a lot of our success in becoming, now we have the lowest rate of COVID spread in the county, in King County. That success was in large part due to the leadership of some really impressive people who had some vision. And so we'll be interviewing some of those folks, Dr. Jim Bristow. These are all doctors, Ina Opplinger, Clayton Olney, and Jenna Rizdahl, and talking to them about how we, you know, the infrastructure that was already in place because of the work that people who had created the and worked on the Medical Reserve Corps, along with the people who you know, the Vashon Be Prepared and the Vashon Community Care Team. It was really a community effort. And so we'll be talking to these doctors about how this all came about and where they'll be going from here.
Well, I can't think of a topic that's more germane to people's lives at this time. So that's wonderful. Could you tell us, Elsa, when this is going to happen? I know it's April 8th. How do they go to Zoom or the museum website? There's no cost, right?
There's no cost, but you do need to register. So go to the Heritage Museum website, and we send out a lot of notices also. But go to our website, click on the talk. It's all listed there, and that'll take you to Zoom where you can register. It's Thursday night. At 7 o'clock, the second Thursday of every month, we have the talks, and you just need to register, and we'll get you into the talk.
And they're about an hour or so in length.
Yeah, just under an hour. We want to be respectful of people's time. Sometimes the question and answer can go longer, and that's fine.
Right. Well, that's my next question. This is very interactive, so people can type in or text in their questions or concerns or anything like that.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions sometimes, and a lot of people get very comfortable putting in a lot of questions and discussion and answers, talking about their history on the island. So it's pretty fun and can be pretty fun and interactive.
You know, as important as this talk is, the MRC, the Medical Reserve Corps, is really part of a bigger entity, correct? Like there are many moving parts that make all this work. Do you think that we'll have maybe talks or shows or something about those folks?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. I mean, as you just said, there are so many moving parts, so many parts of the MRC and so many people involved. The doctors that we'll be listening to, hearing with this first talk, they are a humble group who really want to make sure that many people are recognized. And so there are many others with all those different parts that we'll bring in to talk in future talks, possibly in the fall, but definitely in the future. This more information is going to be coming and more people will be talking about this.
Well, I'm sure the COVID situation will be front of mind in a couple of months, regardless. The talk is on April 8th. It's at 7:00. And you can go to the museum website to register for it. And the last thing I want to mention, if you missed the talk on April 8th, it will be available to stream from the museum's website after that. So, but it takes about a week to get up or something like that, right, Elsa?
Yes, takes about a week. Give us a week.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both. And good luck to both of you.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, patient listeners, now it's time for the answers to our trivia contest. Question number one, the Russian Orthodox Church on Maury Island has a connection with a well-known dive bar in Boston. What is the connection? What do you think? You know it, don't you?
I think I do, yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I was going to jokingly say, oh, it's got to be connected to Cheers.
Yes! The connection is John Ratzenberger, who played Cliff Clavin, born in 1947 in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Apparently, he had some land on the island that he donated to the church. And of course, he was on that sitcom, I think, for its entire run. But for our younger listeners who don't know about Cheers, Mr. Ratzenberger was also had a role in every Pixar movie ever made.
Question number two. What two Vachon industries were the largest west of the Mississippi? And the answer is the Beale Greenhouses and the Dockton Shipyard.
I think that's amazing. This little 13-mile island had two giant industries with the biggest thing, especially shipbuilding. I mean, you think of, big cities.
So, I think of Bremerton, actually.
Yeah.
I think it should be. Question number three. Winghaven used to go by another name back in the 1920s and 30s. What name did it go by? And the answer, any idea, Chris?
Chicken Wing Haven. That's good. Because we had so much poultry on the island.
We did, didn't we, back then? But the answer to number three is Twickenham Estate.
Wow.
Yes, that was Twickenham Estate.
That sounds That sounds so British, doesn't it? Twickenham
Estate. I know. I wanted to, have a cup of tea when I said that. Twickenham Estate. And according to the April 9th, 1931 Vashon Island News record, in quotes, an industry much out of the ordinary is being developed on the north end of the island at the Twickenham Estate. It is the commercial rearing of goldfish. Yes, I did say goldfish. The outgrowth of a beginning made 4 years ago in the lily ponds, developed by Mr. E.H. Moy for his own pleasure, end quote. So
Wow. Goldfish. Can you say invasive species?
Invasive species. And wouldn't that be koi? So, I mean, if they're goldfish are in big ponds, they grow really big.
Yeah. Not the same fish, a koi and a goldfish. I mean, they're both kind of big carp looking things.
Yes, we'll go with that. Yes.
Of course, koi is thousands of dollars. Carp is $5 for a ton.
Right.
All right, my turn. Question number four. Where was the first museum located? I read this kind of quickly, and of course I thought it was going to be Enagaldi Nana, the Babylonian princess. She had a museum of Mesopotamian antiquities back in 530 BC. I mean, doi, everybody knows that, right? Then I read the question, and it's the first museum on Vashon. Kind of different. The very first museum on Vashon was at Newport Beach, which I thought was in California. But in the 1936 Vashon Island news record, it states a museum is to open at Newport Beach location. Vashon Island residents will soon be privileged to visit the Indigenous Peoples Museum, practically completed at Newport. L.C. Wainick, a Seattle artist coming here in search of relief from hay fever. Really? Coming here for hay fever over Seattle? Okay, never mind. Apparently, he found a location which seemed ideal. A splendid collection of Indigenous people's curios will be displayed in a room 24 feet long, 14 feet wide, overlooking the inner Quartermaster Harbor. Artifacts include arrowheads, beadwork, stone instruments, and instruments used in cooking, skinning, as well as objects of religious ceremonies. Now, from what I've learned since, these artifacts are no longer on the island. They're at another museum. Maybe in Newport Beach, California. I don't know.
Okay, trivia question number five. Docton Park was established in 1936. What was the nickname island people knew it by? The answer, it was known to island people as Sleepy Hollow. In January of 1936, state park commissioners visited the island to inspect four parcels of land to be developed into a public park. The third, a Maury Island site, known to island people as Sleepy Hollow. There are 23 acres in the tract, which lies on either side of the Docton Road. The old Docton Road gives access to a beach 16 feet long. The price is $1,300. A large spring with a flow of possibly 2 inches gives a year-round supply of water.
Wow. So
less lovely.
Yes. Less than a dollar per foot of beachfront property. Wow.
We should have been investing in property back then.
I know. All right, Islanders, there's your trivia. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions or you want to provide some trivia, just email us at radio@vashonheritage.org and we'll be happy to answer you. Well, Elsa, that's about our show. We got to go.
Another great show. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you so much for participating and putting up with our silliness. And listeners, we really do want this show to be something that you're interested in. So if there's a topic you're interested in, a subject you want us to cover, just email us radio@vashonheritage.org and just let us know. We'll be happy to cover this.
I'd like to hear from listeners. I'd like to hear about like their favorite story about the island or about the museum. What's your favorite part of the museum?
Exactly.
What's your favorite artifact? Let us know. We'd love to learn what that is.
I'd also like to thank the brains of the operation, those folks that don't get in front of a microphone, but do all our research as far as trivia and stories to tell. That would be Bruce Allman, Mike Suddeth, Lori Tucker, Sean Malone, and Gene Finley. Thank you very much. And be sure to stay tuned for the Mostly True radio show coming up next.